In the fog of war, the truth is often the first casualty. But sometimes, piece by piece, journalists can reconstruct exactly what happened. On the 28th of February, an elementary school in southern Iran was struck during the opening days of the US-Israeli bombing campaign. At least 175 people were killed, many of them children. It is, so far, the worst mass casualty event of the war. It's News Talk Daily. I'm Ciara Doherty. And war is always terrible, but there is something particularly devastating about seeing the broken bodies of children being pulled from the rubble and hearing the grief and pain of parents whose precious youngsters have been stolen from them. At first, responsibility for this strike was unclear. The White House said it didn't know what had happened. President Donald Trump suggested Iran itself could be to blame. But reporters from the New York Times began analysing satellite images, videos filmed by bystanders, missile trajectories and military data. And what they found pointed to a devastating conclusion. A precision American missile, likely a Tomahawk cruise missile, appears to have struck the school during a wider attack on a nearby Iranian naval base. Today on the podcast, we learn how a team of journalists, including one from Limerick, pieced together the evidence behind one of the deadliest incidents of this war. And we ask about what it reveals about modern warfare and what happens when intelligence goes terribly wrong. My guest is Malachy Brown, the Pulitzer Prize-winning Enterprise Director of the Visual Investigations Team at the New York Times. Malachy, thank you so much for joining us today on News Talk Daily.
Thanks, Ciara. It's good to be with you.
There have been so many devastating images that have emerged over the last few years of the consequences of war. But one I think I will always be haunted by is that aerial image of all of those tiny individual graves, nearly 100 of them, that emerged from Minab as these young children, many of them aged between 7 and 12, were being buried.
Yeah. I mean, it was an incredibly striking image that just spoke to the scale of the devastation in Minab. I remember seeing that image coming out on the Monday after the strike, and it was the day before the funerals. It was shared by an Iranian journalist on social media, and I thought, oh my God. And of course, in this world of disinformation, you're kind of thinking, well, is this real? And looking into it, I was able to find a video of the gravediggers and the excavators and the exact same scene filmed from in that aerial image. But it just spoke to the tragedy that befell that small town in the south of the country, you know, and the loss that they were feeling and they'll feel for a long time.
And you talk about the scale of the loss, and there is another image that has emerged from Minab, the day they buried so many of their loved ones in this mass funeral, and thousands of people turning out to try and honour these dead children. The whole town is at a standstill.
Yeah, I mean, the town was absolutely thronged. It was in between that Monday and Tuesday. This was there was a procession of all of the children and their teachers and others who were killed in the strike through the streets of Minab, and, you know, a public gathering at this distinctive roundabout at the heart of the town. And just the outpouring of grief was hard to sort of take in, really. You know, people throwing themselves at the coffins, showering them with petals that were passed out through the crowd, you know, the children's coffins, like bearing their photographs and their names, and also showered with small little sweets kind of wrapped up, you know. And that combined with the photos, there were photographs from the morgue earlier that day where the families were showing up to say their final goodbyes. And again, just like, it was just absolutely devastating scenes, Ciara, like, you know, holding up pictures of on their phones of the child with their parent or their sibling or, you know, what have you. And again, just like, that community is torn apart by what happened.
Given the number of children And as you say, there are teachers that were killed. You would imagine every family within that small town has been impacted and affected by this. Tell us about Menab, Malachy. Where exactly is it?
Menab is a small town right down the south of Iran. It's just a little bit inland from the Strait of Hormuz, which is, you know, an area that we're all hearing about. It's a strategic sort of choke point at the moment, but it's a strategic passage of, you know, a quarter of the world's oil and gas every day. And Iran is choking it off at the moment. And in Menab, you have a naval base, and the naval base is a base of the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, which is Iran's most powerful military and most feared military. And that was an early target of the US and Israeli strikes in their opening salvo on February 28th. And the school was located beside that military base.
Can you describe for listeners what happened at the school?
It was Saturday morning. Saturday is the start of the school week in Iran. And so parents dropped their kids off to school, went about their daily business. And then the offensive began, and they started striking military sites right across the country, taking out government leaders. And one of the sites that they had targeted was this naval base in Menab. And so just a couple of hours into the war, the base was hit, and the school was hit around the same time, very close, within for half an hour, 45 minutes of the base being hit, the school was also hit. And it appeared to have been hit in a wave of strikes. The images that quickly emerged after that showed that more than half of the school, which is a two-story building, a robust, you know, concrete building, more than half of it had been destroyed in a direct hit.
And I think at the time, this story didn't quite get the traction that it deserved because of the wider war in the region, because the Ayatollah had been killed. But your team began analysing the evidence that was emerging from Menab quite quickly. How were you able to identify the exact school that had been struck, Malachy?
In the early reports, the name of the school was being shared around on Iranian social media. We're not there on the ground, unfortunately. I have many Iranian colleagues who have sources in the country, and it was actually they who said, it looks like a school might have been hit. Can you look into this? We were all working in breaking news. As you say, it was a really chaotic, busy morning. Khamenei was killed. Ahmadinejad's residence was bombed extensively, and many other places around the country. So we had the name of the school, and we also had reports that it was near a naval base. Now, finding a school building in an area that isn't very clearly marked as labeled on Google Maps and whatnot as a school was tricky. So it took about an hour, and I started looking for the naval base first and then scanning the area. And in the process of reporting, there was another video that came out around the same time as the video showing the school that was hit, and it showed strikes from inside the IRGC base. And I could tell that because there was an IRGC insignia and the name of the base written on the front of it. And so by finding out where that was on Google Earth and satellite imagery, by comparing features that you see in the videos, I was able to identify first the base and then identify that the remains of the building, of the school building, actually stood beside the base. And you could see the same contours, the same positions of the trees. There was distinctive red and white flagstones outside where cars kind of circled around to drop the kids off. And you could even see the sort of the blue and pink walls of the school and satellite imagery as well. So it was very clearly that building that had been hit.
Because there were videos, I know, that had come out that were showing rescue workers just digging through the rubble while families searched for the victims. You could see the children's little books. You could see their school bags in the rubble. So you had that, I suppose, to work off.
Yeah, I mean, it was very clear that it was a school building because of exactly what you describe, you know, tattered school books like thrown around the debris. You know, blood-stained backpacks. Even, I mean, if it's not too gruesome, like rescue workers pulling out the severed forearm of a child, and then photographs from inside the school looking out at the rescue workers, and you could see cartoon characters that they had painted on the walls. And then somebody actually did a walkthrough of the remains of the building from outside, and you could see the sort of the neatly laid out small wooden school desks covered in debris and dust.
At Tehran University, rows of pencil cases and brightly coloured rucksacks now hang on display. Each one represents a child who never came home from school. They were students ranging from 7 to 12 years old at the Shajara Tayebe Girls Elementary School in the southern Iranian city of Minab. Over 100 schoolgirls killed in a series of strikes. The classrooms, once filled with children's voices, are now silent. Iran calling the attack a massacre in broad daylight. Experts telling ABC News this video surfacing online shows a US-made Tomahawk missile hitting a building adjacent to the girls' school. The day after the strike, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, Dan Kane, said the US had been conducting airstrikes in southern Iran in those early hours of the war where the school was located, with Israel striking in the north.
Yeah, it was very clearly a school. And then, as you say, the wails of the people who arrived to the tragedy of their children buried under the rubble. The school, according to the teachers' union, had put out an emergency call to the parents once the war started to come and collect their kids. And so parents were already on their way when the school was hit. And so they arrived to this scene of absolute horror. And in fact, one of them phoned his entrance. All the cars were blocking the entrance, and he gets out of his car and he walks in. And just the gasps of disbelief in his voice are very palpable.
It's just harrowing. I mean, one of the details in your reporting is that the building had once been part of a military base. What did the historical imagery show, and when did it become a school?
Well, you're right. The building that the school was in was once within this broader, bigger sort of rectangular compound. If you can imagine a rectangular compound looking down overhead, you see all of these warehouses and the military side of things. And then over kind of almost jutting out that northern corner of this base is an area where the school building is. It's a big two-story building. Now, we're not quite sure when it became a school. There are some reports that it was a school for the children of the IRGC going back decades. But sometime between 2013 and 2016, we can see in publicly available satellite imagery on Google Earth that it was cordoned off. There was a perimeter wall built, watchtowers that were in that area were taken away, and then public entrances were opened up into the school as well. And they clear the ground and put in a playing field and an hopscotch area and other playing areas that you can see painted into the asphalt that was laid down there. And those pink and blue walls were painted on with the cartoon characters and all of that. And so it clearly at that point had become used by the public. So the only entrance into it previously was through the base. Now there were three entrances on the public roads, and it was cordoned off from the base. You actually couldn't get to it through the base.
In the immediate aftermath of this, Maliki, there were multiple and conflicting accounts as to who was actually responsible for this.
The timeline of the school being hit at the same time as the adjacent naval base suggests that it was part of either Israel or US strikes. The nature of the strike in the building suggests that it was a direct strike. And then we also got satellite imagery that showed that all of the strikes in the base and the school were precision strikes, which means that the coordinates are programmed into the missiles. And that's, Israeli or US capability, not Iranian. Even before Kane said that in the press conference, we had been asking the Israeli and US officials questions. And the Israeli officials said we weren't in that area at that time. And so we were looking more at CENTCOM, US Central Command, who were overseeing, conducting this war. And they said, we're investigating, but we don't target civilians. So there wasn't much coming from them until that press conference with Dan Kane, where he presented this map. He showed the US striking in the first 100 hours in the south and Israel in the north and west of Iran. And they had, in fact, a little red diamond for strike points. And one of those diamonds was in around Minab. And so at that point, we felt that all of the evidence pointed towards US responsibility for the strike. And so we put out our initial story with that. And as you say, then President Trump still said that Iran was responsible, but then a video emerged of a Tomahawk missile hitting the base. And only the US uses tomahawks in this war. And so that was the most conclusive piece of evidence yet.
But what's been really interesting to watch is how President Trump has responded to this, because he seems to have been suggesting that there are other players who would have access to those tomahawk weapons.
Yeah, that's right. My colleague Sean McCreesh, you know, was asking questions as we were reporting at every opportunity.
You just suggested that Iran somehow got its hands on a tomahawk and bombed its own elementary school on the first day of the war. But you're the only person in your government saying this. Even your defense secretary wouldn't say that when he was asked, standing over your shoulder on your plane on Saturday.
Yeah, at another news conference, the day beforehand, as I said, President Trump said that it was Iran. Then the video of the U.S. tomahawk striking the base emerges. And then on the Monday, President Trump is in Miami and he holds a news conference and says, well, Iran has tomahawks. You know, it could have been Iran. Many countries have tomahawks.
Why are you the only person saying this?
Because I just don't know enough about it. I think it's something that I was told is under investigation. But tomahawks are used by others, as you know. Numerous other nations have tomahawks. They buy them from us. But I will certainly, whatever the report shows, I'm willing to live with that report.
Yep. And so Sean questioned him there and said, are you suggesting that Iran somehow got their hands on a tomahawk and bombed their own school? And so, I mean, the fact is that Iran doesn't have tomahawks, so we don't know where he was getting his information from. They're produced in the US, they're sold to the UK and to Australia, neither of whom are allies of Iran. And then in the last couple of years, the Netherlands and Japan have signed deals with the US, but it's unclear if they've even received tomahawks. So there's no way Iran has a tomahawk. And even if they did somehow manage to get one, my colleague John Ismay, who used to work in the US Navy and is an expert in all things weaponry, we wrote a story and he wrote into it that the Iranians don't have the capability to launch tomahawks as cruise missiles, as guided missiles. So yeah, it's definitely a US strike at this point.
Eventually, the Pentagon did open an investigation into this, and the inquiry has put forward preliminary findings which suggest that the United States was responsible. Now the question, I suppose, is how did this happen?
Yeah, that is the question that everybody wants to know. You know, this isn't, it's not like this was, you know, a strike weeks or months into a dynamic war where there's lots of movement of people into buildings that are nondescript or, that might have been hit accidentally. This is the opening salvo of a very well-planned war, or what should have been a very well-planned war, and they hit a school and kill 150 or more children. It's like, it's absolutely devastating and will go down as one of the most devastating strikes in a U.S. conflict. From our reporting, what we understand is that there's three agencies involved. There's the National Geospatial Agency, and they maintain satellite imagery that informs U.S. targeting. There's a Defense Intelligence Agency, and they develop targets, and they pass on that target list to the U.S. Central Command, who are the operations group. They're the people who are actually conducting the war, and there are supposed to be checks and balances along the way against these targets to make sure that they're not hitting civilian objects or civilian buildings. And it looks like they used outdated information. They used old satellite imagery, it appears. That's the preliminary findings that we're getting reporting on through sources. But of course, we wait the full outcome of that investigation.
Which is really quite shocking, isn't it, Maliki, given the fact that you were able to access, I think, commercially available imagery that was able to establish quite clearly and very quickly that there was a school here. And this, as you say, happened in the very opening hours of this war. How in God's name could a mistake like that slip through?
We don't know. It's an egregious mistake, Kira. Like, as you say, it's just like it beggars belief that they could miss this. Like, Reuters even published a report with the website of the school and all of these photographs that are consistent with what we see in the aftermath of kids in their classrooms playing outside. In fact, some of the same cartoon characters you can see there. So had they been, like, you know, truly updating their intelligence about civilian objects in Iran before they decide to bomb the country, then, you know, they should have caught this, and there should have been, you know, it should have been well flagged ahead of any sort of programming of missiles hitting that area. But one of the things that the US has you know, a very checkered history in this regard. My former colleague Azmat Khan put out a two-year investigation into strikes in the Middle East by the US, drone strikes that had killed a lot of civilians. I don't know if you remember, like a couple of years ago during the withdrawal from Kabul, they also killed an aid worker that they said was a terrorist and that they feared was going to carry out a car bombing in Kabul near after the Abbey Gate incident. And after that, the Department of Defense started putting in place initiatives for civilian protection. They had a civilian protection center of excellence. But last year, Defense Secretary Hegseth decided to gut that. And so, you know, this group was tasked with like maintaining no strike lists, having better intelligence about civilian areas, and also from sources I've been talking to, red teaming with targeting teams to ensure that there isn't any sort of bias or isn't something like this that slips through the net. So again, we just have to wait and see what the full investigation produces. But it's just like an absolutely dreadful mistake.
Finally, Maliki, what do you think this investigation tells us about modern war and about the role actually of journalism in all of this in holding power to account?
Well, I think journalism is incredibly important, first in the sort of the fog of war that you mentioned at the top of this interview, because there's such a deluge of disinformation around this. Initially, you know, there were reports from Iran reflexively that Israel was responsible. Then there were reports online that this was actually the video of the school bombing was actually filmed in Kabul 5 years ago, which is untrue. And Grok got a hold of that and then perpetuated that myth. And then there were reports that it was an errant Iranian missile using a photograph of a missile kind of going up in the air, doing a U-turn and then crashing to the ground. That was taken 600 miles away in another part of Iran. And so first you're met with like all of this disinformation that creates utter confusion around an incident like this. And then secondly, you know, you're being stonewalled by the officials who should have answers to it. And so, you know, we kept asking day after day U.S. Central Command questions. And eventually we felt we had enough evidence to point towards U.S. responsibility. And, you know, I think it's our responsibility to put that out there in order to create the pressure to try to get answers and try to get some sort of transparency about what happened, so that, you know, at a minimum, measures can be put in place to safeguard against this happening into the future, but also that there be accountability for what happened here, and maybe even restitution for the victims, particularly as the nature of warfare is changing. And it's, you know, it rarely now is it boots on the ground. You know, it seems to be these wars that are fought from a distance with so-called precision munitions, but precision munitions that can have, you know, absolutely horrendous outcomes if the targeting is off, as it was in this case.
You talk about accountability there. You talk about even restitution for victims. What is the likelihood of that, Maliki?
You wouldn't hold out much hope. I mean, one thing that struck me about the response of President Trump and other officials in his administration is the defensive posture they've been taking towards this, which has been devoid of any empathy for the victims and the images that you described and that many of us have seen of the heartache in Manab. So, I mean, who knows? I think in this administration, the language is quite bellicose. So it's hard to see what effect, you know, the investigation into this will have. And, you know, maybe we need to investigate other incidents, because many civilians have been killed so far in this war. So, I think we're only at the early stages of reporting out the consequences.
Maliki Brown, thank you so much for joining us here on News Talk Daily. And you can follow the work of Maliki and his colleagues on nytimes.com. And I highly recommend you do that. Thanks for your company today. You can listen back to this and all of our podcasts on the Go Loud Player, Apple and Spotify. And be sure to follow or like us so that you never miss an episode of News Talk Daily. Until the next time, goodbye.